Hi. On the 5th and 6th of June 2024, I'll be speaking at the largest AI event in Asia, Super AI in Singapore, at the iconic Marina Bay Sands. Alongside brilliant minds like Edward Snowden, Benedict Devon, and Balaji Srinivasan, I'll be on a stage exploring the extraordinary potential of AI and the profound change it represents, not just for financial markets, but also for the world as we know it. With over 5,000 attendees and over 150 side events, Singapore will become a vibrant hub for a full week from the 3rd and 9th of June. Visit superai.com to register and join me with 20% off tickets using the code REALVISION. Use the link in the description and I'll see you there. It's going to be incredible.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the second installment of our series, Research Like the Pros. With me today, Brent Donnelly, president of Spectra Markets, and Peter Bukvar, CIO of Bleakley Financial Group. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi, Maggie. Hi, Brent.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Thanks for being with us. So, you know, we've been talking when you've been both been on, you know, over the course of really a good part of last year and into the new year, that this is a really tough and at times confusing investing environment we're in, right? There's a lot of noise, a lot of conflicting signals. Just people are really unsure, hard to see into the future. So we wanted to take the opportunity this week to take a step back and talk about the process and thinking that goes into the great analysis that you both do and help our viewers feel a little bit more confident about how they can use research to be smarter investors and maybe to deal with some of this sort of anxiety and uncertainty we all feel. So we're so pumped that you could be with us. It's a little different, right? We're used to meeting on the daily briefing, but I think this is going to be really fun. So why don't we start out with each of you talking a little bit about your origin story, I guess. When did you go from just being a market participant to actually kind of building your own framework and an operating system, an operating research system, if you will? Brent, why don't you kick us off? Do you remember when you kind of made that switch?
Well, I do, because when I started in the business, I was a market maker and it was very flow oriented. So there wasn't really much of a process required. You were more of like a robot responding to clients' flows and executing for them. And then as flow became automated, there was kind of this survival of the fittest thing that happened, where the market makers that had a little bit more macro or risk-taking appetite survived, and those that were flow-oriented struggled. And I found a lot more interesting anyways to do the more macro-oriented and risk-taking stuff. So it was really like a long process that took many years, because initially I was more focused on technicals and some simple things like that. Then I added correlation, but then eventually correlation stopped working. So the whole process of me developing my process was really kind of an ongoing evolution that continues to this day, because whatever worked 2 years ago doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to work 2 years from now. So for me, that was a huge lesson as well, was the things that you're making money doing right now are almost by definition going to get discovered by the market and not be profitable later on. I'm talking about trading, of course, not investing. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's been an evolution. And then the one other thing I would say is that going from a bank to a hedge fund, because I worked at a hedge fund for a few years, the risk management approach is just so different and it's so much more rigorous and also more adaptable at a hedge fund, because your capital changes. Whereas at a bank, it tends to be more simplistic, like don't lose this much money today or don't lose this much money in a month. Whereas at a hedge fund, you have to scale in terms of your capital, scaling up as you get more capital. So it's a lot more rigorous. And I learned a lot from that as well.
Yeah, it's so interesting. A couple of things I want to ask you about that. But Peter, what about you?
I think in the beginning, it was really trying to figure out of what type of investor trader that I wanted to be. You know, like there's no one rule of thumb path to success in making money in the markets. And I think it's important for each individual to sort of curate a style that fits their personality and risk tolerance. Like I discovered pretty early on that after reading like Market Wizards, like, wow, it'd be really cool to be a trader. And then tried it and realized that I wasn't any good at it. And that what I was better at was more longer term type thinking when it came to an investment. In other words, not how something is going to play out on a data point or in the next couple weeks based on some event, but what's going to play out over multiple years. And that was just my own personal sort of style that I became comfortable with. And rather than being a market wizard, you know, I sort of tended towards like Warren Buffett's type style of thinking with extended timeframes, focusing on big picture themes. And that also allowed me to sort of block out a lot of the daily noise. Mm-hmm. And then if I had a vision of how something was going to play out, now I could have obviously been wrong with that, but if I had a thesis that I was focused on and researched and felt that had a higher probability than 50% of playing out, then that allowed me to block out a lot of short-term influences. And if I own a company I like, whether they meet or beat earnings expectations is not necessarily going to shift my thesis. But if the fundamental backdrop of the business model changes, well, then that causes me a rethink. But it took me time and a lot of lost money to figure out like sort of what did I wanted to be when I grew up in this business. And, you know, I finally came around to a style that fit me and fit what I felt that I was better at and trying to avoid what I was not good at. And that was more short-term trading. And that's what I've come around to. And also in terms of my analysis, you know, I sort of started out as a plain vanilla, like stock picker, mostly like smaller and mid-cap stocks, where I liked delving under the hood of a company's fundamentals and their situation, what their outlook is. But then, you know, sort of being in the markets, I felt like adding macro to that, and I sort of have become a macro person, but I at heart like to do the bottoms up as well. I felt that it was important to marry both, like rather than just being a micro person. You know, you hear some stock pickers, oh, I don't pay attention to the macro. Meanwhile, they may be buying a cyclical business. You know, Warren Buffett says, I don't pay attention to the macro, but he owns an oil company. So he does have to pay attention to the macro because that drives the fundamentals of his micro thoughts. And I felt that marrying the two together would be, you know, an effective way of analyzing not just the economic situation, broadly speaking, but the situation of a company that you may like the stock of. So, and then that's what I've come to today, where I'm listening to a lot of company conference calls of whether it's stocks we own, stocks we don't own, but to get under, you know, on the ground information, but also following the day-to-day macro and what a data point is here and whether it's rates and monetary policy and FX and commodity prices and all that, how that ties into, all ties in together.
Hey everyone, we're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Join over 5,000 attendees for the largest AI event in Asia at Super AI Singapore, June 5th and 6th, 2024. Raoul Pal, Benedict Evans, Balaji Srinivasan, Edward Snowden, and over 150 others will join the industry's most influential to explore and unveil the next wave of transformative AI technologies. Singapore will become a vibrant AI hub for a week from June 3rd through June 9th, with over 150 side events that will make for unparalleled networking opportunities. Visit www.realvision.com/superAI for 20% off tickets with the code REALVISION or click below.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I know that focus on the sort of underneath the hood, because we always lean on you to pull out a line from a conference call that no one heard or paid attention to, because you kind of get down and dirty in the details, which we love. I'm hearing both of you talk about you can't live in a silo, right? It sounds like, I mean, both of your approaches have evolved, have changed, but you can't just look at one tiny slice anymore. And I think we feel that because it's such a complicated global financial system, and so much is influencing markets. It's not that simple anymore. I think that people kind of think that you know stuff and you don't, which is, you know, it's very intimidating, right? They listen to you guys and they just think that you have some access to knowledge that they don't have and can't possibly. But what you're telling us is that this is a sort of constant learning journey, which is super interesting. And both of you kind of adding on that macro later. I didn't actually know that. And I think that's so fascinating. It gives us all hope that we can do that. And that's why we spend a lot of time talking about what's going on from a macro point of view, because you have to layer it on the individual investments. Brent, you look at FX as well, which is interesting because, or a lot, I should say. Talk to us about why that's important, because I think we went from a period where there wasn't a lot going on, and that's changed a lot. Talk to us about how foreign exchange kind of fits in the picture.
Sure. I just want to touch on one quick thing that Peter said, because I think it's really important, is having a little bit of self-awareness as to your own personality and your style and what's going to work is really important for people that are newer. What I found was a lot of young people that came to the trading floor would kind of look at someone who's successful and try to copy that. And it just never, ever works. What you have to do is look at multiple people who are successful, take a couple little things from one, a couple things from the other one, and then slowly create your own style. Because like, I don't have the patience to do what Peter does. And so there's no point in me trying. Like, my personality is much more geared towards, you know, excitement and gambling and that kind of thing. And so I know that, and I just acknowledge that, and my style reflects that. In terms of the importance of FX.
Wait, Brent, I just want to jump in because I think that's so important. I'm glad you pointed that out, because one of the things that we talk about in the Academy and any of the educational things we do, one of the first modules is know what kind of investor you are. Like, why are you doing this? I'm just curious, do you hear that from clients though, where they think they're one thing, but actually they're something else? Like, or what they're doing, they want to sort of take that risk, but they're actually risk averse. I'm sure both of you come across that with the clients you deal with.
Yeah, I'm laughing because I even do it myself sometimes. Like, sometimes you'll see someone saying, well, Chinese demographics look really bad over the next 20 and this and that. And they're going on about balance sheet recession in China. And so I'm going to buy dollar China with a stop loss, and their stop loss is like 2% away or something like that. So it's like a 20-year view with a one day's range stop loss away. I think matching your style and your view to your parameters and the structure of your trade is really important. So like, if I'm doing something that's beyond about a week in duration, which is unusual because usually my trades are more like a week or less, then I'll usually do it in options because I feel like that structure will override my lack of patience because there's a little bit more of a switching cost, or there's more friction to get in and out of options. So yes, I definitely see that people have very often have a mismatch between time horizon and or trade structure and time horizon. And the other place you'll see that sometimes is where people, like Peter was saying, will analyze everything about copper and they'll say, okay, there's a shortage and there's nothing in London and this and that, but they won't look at the other side of the equation, which is usually more macro, which is the demand side. So you always have to have kind of like a top-down and bottom-up approach, I think, to anything you're looking at, or it's just too often you'll just get run over by some other factor that you didn't even consider. So I think having a macro look, and then to your question on FX, I mean, FX kind of is two things. One, it obviously has a direct impact on, say, multinational earnings. It has an impact on oil imports in Japan. Like, there's a lot of macro and micro impacts, but then it also can be a barometer of capital flows. So like, when the US is the center of innovation, and it's the only strong place for growth, then, you know, that's reflected in a lot of places, not just Mag 7, but also in the dollar. So I think a lot of times you can, even if you're not in an FX person, you can use FX as kind of a barometer of where the money's flowing, because a lot of FX flows are real money. So people are buying an asset or buying, you know, buying stocks in Europe, or they're buying a company in Europe, and then they're buying euros in order to facilitate that transaction. So a lot of times I think FX is a good barometer for capital flows overall, including emerging markets and G10.
Yeah, that's a great point. Peter Brandt, who's a lot of our viewers will know, we have him on, a very experienced kind of veteran technician and trader. One of the first interviews I did with him, he said, if I don't get the dollar right, I don't get anything right. And that was such an sort of interesting, and boy, did he get the dollar right that year, and a lot of other things as well. Peter, do you find that as well, that you talked about your self-awareness and journey about figuring out what you were good at. Do you feel like there's a mismatch when you're talking to clients about what they think they want and what they, you know, what they're really talking about underneath? Does that come up with you?
Yeah, well, my struggle always is, you know, the way, and just to add on to, you know, what Brent and I both discussed, is not only does each person have to sort of develop their own style of investing or trading, it's also what they're comfortable buying. Some people are comfortable sort of hopping on momentum and saying everything's great with this company and it's going to stay great, so I'm okay buying high in hopes of selling higher, which is fine. That may work for a period of time. I'm more comfortable looking at things through a more of a value lens and looking for more things that are bombed out. Like, I'm looking at the 52-week low list when I'm looking for something to buy rather than the 52-week high list. But that's very difficult, because sometimes I can be right on an investment, but it could take 2 years to come to fruition. Like, I'm not a good market timer either, where I can say, okay, this is the moment that things are going to inflect higher, and I'm buying it at the exact bottom right before it ticks up. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked out that way for me. And whereas I think that certain stories can play out sooner rather than later, sometimes it doesn't. Like, I was long uranium for years, and Cameco in particular, at $10, and it sat at $10 for years before it finally moved higher. So we're in a situation where a lot of our clients happen to be retail, and they see what happens with AI chip stocks, and they see that going up, and you always get the question of, you know, why do you not own that instead of something else? And where sometimes the time horizons of you relative to an investor are different. And sometimes, you know, the investor focuses on things that are hot while you're focused on things that are not, in hopes of it will eventually get hot. I think it was Bernard Baruch saying, I'm trying to buy something that I find attractive that others will find attractive at some point in the future.
Yeah, you get there early.
So, and a lot of times I get there too early, but that's trying to time, you know, trying to manage the time horizon and matching that up with how you make an investment. And it doesn't always line up. And I always am testing my thesis and, like, is this story still on track? And yes, it's taking longer than I thought, but will it eventually come around? Like, my new trade is to be long fertilizer stocks, because corn and soybean prices to me are bombed out and the positioning is very, very short. But I can't tell you when this will actually work. It could be a year before these stocks go higher, and maybe they go lower before they go higher. I just feel like we've reached an extreme point where they are finally attractive, and I'm not smart enough to get my timing exactly right. Whereas Brent and other short-term traders, I think they're much better at sort of timing that inflection point at which a trade would work. Mm-hmm.
You know,
but I think understanding the difference is important, right, Brent? Like, there's a place for all of it.
Yeah, what's interesting about what Peter said is that on the shorter fractal, I find the same challenge, which is, you put on a trade and then it's not working, but it's not going against you, because I always use stop losses. And then you have to question, like, okay, am I just bored and I'm being impatient, or is there information here? And generally, if you look at the moves in the market, in any market, it's very concentrated into very specific periods. So, like, you know, 2 hours out of the day is going to represent the majority of the move in a currency most days. And so a lot of it is, there's an expression that's related to war. It's something like, it's hours of boredom punctuated by moments of terror. And trading is basically the same thing. And so having, even on my shorter time horizon, there still is a patience element. Obviously time's dilated in a different way, but there still is that element of, there's a lot of noise. And that's why I like trades where I know I have a specific catalyst, because again, as an impatient person, you know, my favorite trade is to say, I've done all this analysis and I think core PCE is going to be hotter than expected. And then I put the trade on at 8:24, and, you know, by 9 o'clock I'm out and I'm either right or wrong and happy days. And again, that's tailoring your trading style to your personality.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Your pet is one of a kind, and so is their journey. While every playful moment is a memory in the making, sometimes our cats and dogs are a little too good at getting into trouble. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help get your pet the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/realvision. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/realvision. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/realvision. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you, by the way, in addition to being an impatient person, Brent is also a fantastic writer, and his notes are so entertaining, and they always have more information than just markets. I learn a lot from them, and they're great. One day we'll get into your former past as a, what was it, a sketch writer, a cartoon developer? There's this whole life Brent had in Canada. Fantastic.
Yeah, I got a couple of lives going on.
Yes. And they filter through, which I really appreciate. But you both mentioned something really important, I think, and this is something that comes up. I'm curious if you hear it from your clients. It's something comes up in the questions we get all the time. Because of course you're always able to ask live questions, and you know, we do this on the show, is people have an idea and then they're not sure if they're right. And then they're wondering if they should pull the ripcord. So you both have these sort of, you know, process and framework that you've built. And it sounds like, I think, Peter, you said you're always testing them. Like, there are going to be times when you think you're wrong. Does it help you developing this operating system or this framework? Does it help you keep you on the path so that you're not being whipped around by every piece of data that comes in? Because that's what happens right now to people. They hear, and we were just talking really quickly about NVIDIA before we came on air. Oh, it's oversold. It's going to sell off. And then the next person comes on. Oh, this is the, you know, the next greatest thing. Or Elon Musk, Tesla, another great example. I believe in Elon. He's the next coming. Or this stock is, you know, and their head's on a swivel. They don't know who to listen to or what's right. It seems so conflicting. Peter, how do you deal with that? And when you're, you know, what do you mean when you're always testing against your framework?
Well, the one of the first questions I ask myself before I buy a stock is, are you willing to buy more if the price goes down? Now, a short-term trader, if they, after they buy something, the price goes down, they likely stop themselves out. me being a longer term investor, I say to myself, am I willing to buy more? And if the answer is yes, well, then I buy the stock and then I use weakness as an opportunity to buy it cheaper. And if it gets even cheaper, I use that as an opportunity to buy even more. Now, at some point, you know, I get things wrong and it just keeps on going down and the fundamentals don't turn out the way you think and business is more challenged, or this is going to take much more time to play out, where a lot of investors in the stock have a, you know, don't have the patience that you do, and then it's time to possibly reevaluate. But that's really the question I ask myself, because I always think, try to look at things the opposite of which the market does. And I always use the analogy that, you know, Walmart is the biggest private sector employer in the country because of everyday low prices that attracted people to come to their store. Where the New York Stock Exchange, when it says everyday low prices, everyone's running for the hills. And I try to turn that around with looking, and that's how I look for cheap stocks. And if a cheap stock gets cheaper, that's great. But again, that comes with its own risk that you could be wrong. And the person selling it to you is smarter than you are in this particular situation. So getting to your question about testing the thesis, when something goes down after you buy it, you're always need to test the thesis, because you always wonder, does somebody know something that I don't? Is someone making a smarter move than I am? And I always wanted to test that and see whether that's the case or not. Now, obviously, mostly in hindsight, do you determine that? But that's always part of the retesting of a thesis.
Yeah. And why you pay such close attention to so many of those details that are overlooked. And listen, we're in an environment where there's a lot of information, it's moving fast. And we talked about this yesterday with Tony and Jared, Warren Buffett just recently saying the market feels more casino-like than it ever has, because everyone's kind of addicted to these immediate gratification 10X. Everyone thinks they've got the next lock on something. So it's hard. Like the idea of discipline has kind of gone out the window. So it's a tough environment to operate in. Brent, how do you separate out? Because you're all seasoned. You've developed this framework. You developed your research process. How do you filter out what's real and what's noise, especially when you're looking more short-term and momentum in trading? How can you tell the difference?
Right. So first of all, just to address the thing of like, it's harder than ever. Everyone says it's harder than ever every year. I feel like it's, trading's never been easy. But anyways,
that's so true. It's
when the
really
algorithms
hard.
Came in 2006, everyone was like, this market is ruined. The algorithm. And I mean, the market just is whatever it is to me, but, it's always hard. The thing I think that you were talking about, you know, the different views that people have and then trying to keep up with it, all the different stories and all that. I think chasing stories is probably like the biggest leak in finance. Maybe negativity bias is bigger, but chasing stories and doing what other people are saying you should do is the worst possible way to trade. And so it really comes down to having your own process. So like, my process is kind of around narratives, what regime we're in, positioning, correlation, and some other things. And I mean, I think Jared said this first, or maybe he's quoting someone, but listen to many and respect few, I think is a good motto. Like, you should have your own process and you're listening to other people in order to see how they look at the world or to get information that they're looking at, but certainly not to trade their views, because even if they're right, you don't know when they're getting in and out. You don't know when they're doubling down or flipping. You know, Druckenmiller can say something on TV one day, but he might flip his position the next day, and you obviously would not know that. So following other people, I think, is the worst possible process. What you have to do is develop your own process. And then, so for me, I kind of have like the seven things that I look at. And the more of those that are in line, like techs and positioning and correlation and all that, then as they come into line, you know, if I get five or six out of seven, then I can say, okay, this is a really interesting trade. And if it's three out of seven or two out of seven, then I know this is probably, there's a lot of crosswinds. So for me, I'm looking for all the wind kind of blowing in the same direction. And like I said, like, I have those kind of seven pillars of my process, but they don't always have the same weightings. Like, I used to factor technicals a lot more. as a trade selection tool. Now I use it just as a risk management tool. Correlation kind of went away because everyone's watching it. So I'm always kind of changing my process, but having, I think just knowing what your process is the first step, like writing it down and saying, okay, here's what I do. And if you, you know, if your process is I buy whatever's going up, or I listen to the people on CNBC or whatever, then, you know, if you write that down, you'll probably say, okay, this isn't a good process. You need to have your own process and follow it, and then just kind of absorb information from outside sources, but don't follow them.
Yeah. And there's a place for all of it, right? I mean, there's a knowing who you are is helpful, but all of you take input from different places. And I love the idea of writing it down, because we know, I mean, we've done sessions with Denise and, you know, taking a look at people who are really struggling. And when they say they have a process, then suddenly you're like, wait a minute, but do you really? Because when they have to list it, then it starts to get a little bit unclear. And so that's, I think, really important. Peter, how do you blend fundamentals and technicals and sentiment? How do you think about all of those in the pot when you're talking about your framework?
So for the technicals, you know, because I have a longer term time frame, is I look at charts every single day, but it's more just giving me perspective on that particular security, whether it's a stock or the price of gold or the price of oil, just so I can see where we've been, how we got here. What were some of the influences that resulted in these big moves up and down? So it's that perspective. I'm not a good chart reader. Now, I've gotten better over the years, just because you've been doing this long enough, you sort of recognize certain chart patterns, but I'm very basic when it comes to that. So I can read a head and shoulders top and a head and shoulders bottom, and you know, usually that helps me, but more of the complicated stuff, I leave it to others. So I think it's just constantly reading and doing more reading about the things that would influence the things that you own and the things that you're looking at. And you know, the world is just one big cobweb with so many things intertwining that you just have to be up to speed on all this. And it's not just 5 days a week, 9 to 5, and then you go home and then it's over, particularly when you're trading FX, when it's around the clock. You know, this is something that you have to be on top of 7 days a week and all the time, and keeping up to speed with the news, because yeah, it's amazing how one thing on this side of the world can somehow make its way to the other side of the world. And you just have to, you know, be able to try to connect those dots.
And can I jump in for 2 seconds?
Yeah, maybe? And you both look globally too, which I wanted to mention. Yeah, please jump in, Brent.
So one interesting thing there too, I think, is that one analogy that someone said one time is that technicals are kind of like driving by looking in the rearview mirror. Like, you kind of have a sense of where the road is. It's not like completely impossible, but it's mostly backward looking, with like maybe a little bit of, you know, you have a sense of where the road is, but you don't know when it's turning. And I think that's a useful analogy. It gives you really good idea of where you've been and a vague idea of where you're going, but on their own, I don't think they work in isolation.
Yeah. It strikes me. So you both look at the global picture as well. And it strikes me that when you're talking about diversification, you know, the idea, we've had a lot of discussions about 60-40, right? Do bonds have a role? What should you be doing in terms of assets? But we don't often talk about global diversification. We don't often talk about diversification from a time horizon, right? Do I have short-term trades I feel strongly about? What am I doing, you know, for my longer-term trades? I know many of you work it that way, and sometimes you have your trading book. I mean, Tony Greer talks about this. I have my trading book, and then I have my other book, like my long-term book. It's just that he tends to talk about his trading book with his clients more. How do you both personally think about time horizon? Do you look short term and long term, even if it's not in your research? How do you think about that, both Brent and Peter, if you could tell us that?
Sure, I'll go quick because my answer is pretty short. So what I've found is that the views tend to get commingled. So like the worst case scenario is you're short term bullish, the thing goes down, and then you decide, oh, this trade is now an investment and I'm long term bullish. So that tends to be a thing that happens. And also for me, I just feel like I have no edge in the long run. I know what my edge is in the short run, and I just try to maximize that. So I'm really focused on one time horizon. And I think it takes a very specific kind of mind to be able to separate the two time horizons and do well in both. And most people, I think, are good at one, but very few can do both successfully.
I think, Peter, why do I have a feeling you're going to agree?
I totally agree. I mean, I mentioned earlier that, you know, I'm usually too early with things, and sometimes I have to sit with things for a while before they work out. I mean, I still look for catalysts, whether it's a management change at a company. You know, I mentioned earlier with corn and soybeans, we have the largest net short position on record. Like, but that doesn't necessarily mean that prices are going to reverse just like that. But I am looking for a catalyst. I just don't always find the right ones or get it right. I think a lot of it is, you know, sort of trial by error in a way. But you know, you do this long enough, you know which are the more influential factors that drive something and what's noise.
Yeah.
Brent knows when there's a big event or a big number or something that's notable that can move a currency, rather than something, yeah, there's something coming out, but it's really, it's usually a non-market moving non-event, therefore I'm not going to play. And you know, that's sort of, you know, a lot of that is just experience and seeing over time what matters. I mean, it's also with like geopolitics. I mean, mostly speaking, geopolitics is a very short-term influencing type event that lasts sometimes days or tops weeks. It's very rare to have a long-term influence. Now, of course, now when something can get drawn out and you can wake up any day with Ukraine and Russia and, you know, some pipeline gets blown up or something happens with the delivery of oil in the Red Sea, whatever, that can be hugely disruptive where geopolitics has a major influence. But it's few and far between that that's the case, and trying to figure out what sort of goes away and ends up being noise and what is a real factor that can drive things, not just in the short term, but over a period of time.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. It does take a lot of experience to do that. And I feel like that when I talk to you, you know, these conference calls can go on for a really long time and there's a lot of information in them and stuff. And yet you'll pull out something that none of us paid attention to and bring it up in a call that it can affect other things as well. And so that's that ability to kind of like grab on to the really salient points and the things that are important and leaning forward are going to give you a sort of hook for the future. I think it's hard, but it's really valued. So what if we sort of wrap it up and leave folks with something to think about, because again, this is sort of part of, we really kind of lean into the education part and trying to help people not just sort of consume content, but think about how they can build a framework to operate off of so they feel more confident. They have the tools they need to make a decision that's right for them. And we're going to require a little bit of everything, right? But just feeling more confident in the process. Because there's such a big hurdle, and it sounds like everybody knows what they're talking about, but you sometimes. What's the one sort of piece of advice or hack or something you've gained from leaning on research that you'd like to leave people with? What's a thought we should leave them with as they kind of, you know, continue on their journey, on their investing journey? Brent?
Well, this kind of relates to what Peter said, but a lot of times people say, where do you find your trade ideas? And really, mostly I find the trade ideas kind of come to me. And the reason is I have my process and I know kind of what I'm looking for. And then I'm just curious and I read a ton of stuff and I follow everything. I read all the central bank speeches and so on. And so there's this kind of like osmosis concept that Peter is talking about, where you just read a lot, absorb a lot of information, and connections start happening in your brain. And of course, it's not going to happen the second year that you're in the market. But I think just being very sort of intentionally curious and following the rabbit holes, you know, if you read something, then dig deeper into it and just follow all the rabbit holes. And then you, not only will you learn the information that you're learning from doing that, you'll also learn what you're interested in and which rabbit holes you really are interested in pursuing. Because ultimately you have to be, my opinion is you have to mostly be doing it as a person that wants to solve puzzles and have fun and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And the money and, you know, performance should be secondary, in my opinion, because ultimately it's a pretty interesting and fun pursuit. And that's intrinsic drive, I think, is more powerful than the extrinsic drive of money.
Yeah, it's a great point. And listen, that knowledge lends itself to a lot of other aspects of life too. There's an intersection of all this. I have certainly found, as somebody who did not intend on talking about finance as much as I do. Peter, what about you?
I couldn't have said it any better than how Brent laid it out. I'll just say, like, I think just important to follow and follow what you understand and know. Like, understand a situation, understand a thesis if you're going to invest in it. Like, I'll never own a biotech stock because that's just over my head. Even like a lot of parts of technology are just over my head. And while I can be pitched and I can read about this great story, this great cure for some disease, or this fast chip that's going to do this or that, for some people that understand it, great for them. That's just not for me. So just really focus on things that you understand. And to what we talked about throughout the call is matching your interests and the things that you can grasp with the type of personality and trading style that fits you, not somebody else, but fits you and what you're comfortable with. You know, some people, they buy a stock, it goes down a dollar and they panic. Well, maybe short-term trading is not for them. Others that don't get bothered by it, they think bigger picture. Okay, well, then maybe that style's for you. There's no one right way of making money in markets.
Yeah, absolutely. You're both incredibly humble because you're both so excellent at what you do. But I think it's really helpful for people to hear the learning journey that you've been on and the difficulties and the fact that you acknowledge that you're not good at everything, I think is really generous of you both, because it's really helpful. Because I said, I think there's a lot of barriers in this. We see it in the questions we get from people and they're really intimidated. But this part of the process, it is a learning journey, and it can be fun, and it is accessible to people. So we appreciate you always both kind of coming with your knowledge and sharing it. We love the fact that you're part of the RV marketplace. We appreciate that. And just, you know, being able to extend what you know to help people along. It's confusing out there. So we appreciate that from you guys. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Maggie.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Peter.
It's fun. These two guys hang out. They know each other too. So it's fun to get them both on the program at the same time. Next time we'll have to do an AMA. You can pile in and ask them a bunch of questions. Sure. And that's the other thing. For me, reading all of your research, listening to you guys, doing the shows with you, even if I just know the smarter question to ask, right? I may not be at the answer, but I'm getting better at asking smart questions to my advisor when I'm thinking about what I need to do for my family. And that's what we're all trying to get to, just that next level. You don't get right to the top, but we're trying to just keep climbing up. So we appreciate it. Thanks, guys. We'll see you soon. Thanks to all of you. We'll be back tomorrow with Paul Hodges and Gio Chen for the continuation of this series. And we'll be back with the Daily Briefing today. Take care and good luck out there.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. At Real Vision, we arm you with the expert knowledge, time-efficient tools, and a powerful network to help you succeed on your financial journey. Get a taste of financial freedom with our free offer at realvision.com/free.